Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places. Welcome to Forward Thinking.
Hey there, and welcome to Forward Thinking, the podcast that looks at the future and says, I will be there and everywhere, here, there, and everywhere. I'm Jonathan Strickland.
I'm Lauren Vogelbaum.
And I'm Joe McCormick. And today, we're not going to mess around at the beginning. We're going to get right to business because we're talking about teleportation.
Yeah, no burying the lead in this episode like we've been known to do. We're like 20 minutes in. So this episode is about, we're talking specifically about the concept of teleportation. Obviously, if you've been a fan of any sort of science fiction, you've probably seen some implementation of this idea.
Mm-hmm.
Star Trek, of course, being probably the best known out of all the sci-fi stories out there that use this device.
Yeah, so we've talked about plenty of science fiction technologies in the past where we often, you know, look at something from a movie or from a futuristic TV show or book, and we say, how plausible is that? Will we ever actually get there? And teleportation, I think, is trickier than some of the ones that we've looked at in the past to come up with a way of saying, yeah, here's how that could work.
Yeah, this one requires a lot of flexible thinking for you to get to a point where you could say, this is obviously not the same implementation that we see in these books and movies, but here's how it would work in the real world. And even in this case, we're like, here's how maybe sort of, yeah, kind of it could possibly sort of work if you got a lot of time on your hands.
But yeah. But we're going to do our best.
Yeah.
So what is the concept in its most basic definition, and how does that apply to the science we're going to bring in? I think we should go basically with the Star Trek model.
I agree.
So the idea is that you're going to take a collection of matter,
mm-hmm,
and that could be a stapler, a Freddy Krueger doll, a cuttlefish, a sopping wet Japanese vengeance ghost.
A red shirt.
Yeah, a red shirt. Perfectly. You take that from one place, cause it to disappear from that place, and make it appear in another place. So this rules out from the beginning things that make a copy of a thing but keep the original where it is.
Right, unless you're talking about that one Star Trek The Next Generation episode where the transporter created a secondary Riker. He sat in chairs the normal way.
I didn't make
There's
it to that
There's no
one.
Such thing as a secondary Riker.
All right,
they're all number one.
All right, that's nice. Nice. That was an excellent joke.
You know, but in ordinal number theory, you could maybe say that number one really is the second number because, of course, Picard is number zero.
Well, he's number one, and then there was number one prime.
Yeah. But, of course, yes. Teleportation, taking a thing, making it disappear from where it is, making it appear somewhere else.
Yeah, the old magician, presto changeo, now I'm on the other side of the stage type deal.
Mm-hmm. Is that even remotely possible via science? And that's the question we're going to imagine today. Now, I think the first thing we should do more, mm-hmm, before we get into anything else is clear up what is actually meant by a phrase you've probably seen in science journalism before. And that phrase is quantum teleportation.
Now, before we jump into this, the first thing I want to mention is that there are very few words out there that cause researchers and scientists familiar with the material to shudder more than the word quantum when it appears in the mass media.
Yeah, because quantum states are wherein stuff does the weird stuff,
yeah,
to begin with.
And it's all on subatomic particle level, right? We're talking on the super tiny level. And the issue I see more often than not is people trying to extrapolate that behavior to the macro world.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not where quantum effects really come into play.
Yeah, it is intrinsically stuff that we only see on this very tiny level.
Yeah. So when we first start talking about quantum teleportation, the word quantum should already put you aware that, you know, something is going to be different from what we're used to in classical physics.
Sure. But of course, quantum teleportation is not something that you should be like, oh, that doesn't really happen. This is referring to a real phenomenon that has been observed in the lab.
It has been created. Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is also where we have to the second word in quantum teleportation causes a bit of a problem as well.
Right, because the way we established teleportation at the beginning of this show, we were talking about the transportation of matter.
Yes.
Which is the sci-fi concept of it, which doesn't actually have that much to do with quantum teleportation.
No, right. Because quantum teleportation is about information,
yeah,
not matter.
It's essentially, it's a form of communication. What you are doing is you are transporting a quantum state from one point to another, but not necessarily the quantum particle. So let's use electrons as an example, because that's easy to imagine. Most of us have at least a passing familiarity with what an electron is. That's the negatively charged subatomic particle that you find in atoms. So electrons have a spin that you can describe as a direction. And let's say that the spin is down for this particular electron. What quantum teleportation would allow you to do is to take the quantum state of that electron. In this case, we're talking about the specific state of the spin. It would be able to take the spin, the downward spin, and transport the downward spin to a distant location, and then you can actually transfer the state of that electron to that location. So you're not moving the electron itself. You're moving a property of that electron to a different electron, essentially, which is a different, a totally different concept than taking a cup and using a transporter to dematerialize the cup and rematerialize it in a different location.
Why a cup?
Just a random object that I decided to pick.
Why not a hatchet?
It could just as easily be a hatchet, Joe.
Okay, let's say it's a hatchet sitting in a large cup.
All right, so there's a hatchet in a cup. And if you were to use this approach, it would not work on that level because you're not talking about quantum states. You're talking about physical objects at that point. However, we have physically moved these states. In 2014, in fact, a team of researchers broke records when teleporting the quantum state of a photon 15 and a half miles or 25 kilometers away. Now, the other thing we have to keep in mind is that this teleportation doesn't mean that they magically made the quantum state of a particle jump
instantaneously.
Right, 15 and a half miles away. It did not happen like that. They actually used an optical cable to transmit the information of that quantum state across this distance. And then they were able to, quote unquote, teleport it. Now, some of you might think that's kind of cheating.
Well, I mean, what comes to my mind as a layperson is, in what sense does the word teleportation convey useful information then?
Well, and it's the same thing. Like, if you were to use
a... It makes people write good headlines.
they're talking about the movement of a quality of a subatomic particle, but not the particle itself. So they needed a word for it, and teleportation was a cool word. They're also, this could be really useful when developing something like a quantum computer network. Mm-hmm. If you wanted to have quantum computers communicate across distances, that's why the record breaking was such a big deal, was because it was a proof of concept that you could actually transmit these quantum states that kind of distance. Now, of course, 15 and a half miles on the solar scale, like the outer space scale, is nothing at all, right? Mm-hmm. Not at all useful in any way.
You just have to get your spaceships real close to each other.
Right. Close enough where, you could probably flash lights and communicate through Morse code. This is the limitations of where the science and technology are right now. And in fact, a lot of researchers believe that there are fundamental limits on how far apart we can put computer systems to communicate through on a quantum level. And it's not a whole lot further away than what they've achieved so far. That being said, there always could be some other discovery or breakthrough that would allow us to extend this further. Maybe it's a different means of actually communicating the information, but we are still communicating information. It's, again, not magically disappearing in one spot and instantaneously appearing in another.
Okay, so quantum teleportation, at least so far, has nothing to do with you being able to teleport your body from one place to another.
Correct.
Or a hatchet or Riker.
A cup.
Yeah.
Or Riker. Or Riker number two. Sorry, number one. Number one, two. I'm so confused.
Number 1.2.
Let's discuss some hypotheses about how teleportation could work and some of the different branches of thinking that you could go down when you're imagining this. And I think there's one big question we need to address right at the beginning, and that question is, are your original atoms going somewhere or not?
Well, that sounds real messy.
Yeah.
I mean, when you think about that, wouldn't it, you know, be more energy conservative to just send yourself without breaking yourself down atomically?
Well, then, in that case, that's not very much teleportation, is it? So
no,
you're saying,
it's just
like,
shipping.
Just yeah. putting your body in a thing and sending it somewhere.
In fact, this is, okay, so this kind of reminded me, like, the question, like, is it your original atoms? I was thinking, like, well, this kind of teleportation only works in the sense if the world worked on Willy Wonka logic,
uh-huh.
where Mike TV gets broken down by the camera and is turned into millions of tiny pieces that fly across the air and then reassemble themselves on a television screen.
Mm-hmm.
In real life, I don't think that would be as successful.
Well, there's no method of transporting the atoms, right? Even if you were able to somehow break
really
something.
Really big fan.
Yeah, I know, right? Like, how would you get the atoms from point A to point B? Assuming that you could break the atoms down and reassemble them perfectly on the other side, how do you get them from point A to point B?
Well, I think there are a couple of schools of thought here at least in the Star Trek writer's imagination.
Sure.
One is the teleporter device dissolves your body, puts your atoms into some kind of, I don't know what it does. It sends your atoms somewhere, and then the atoms reassemble themselves into you in that place.
So if you were somehow able to totally scan something, convert those atoms into energy,
yeah.
and then send the energy to a receiving station that could then take the energy and reincorporate it as physical atoms and then rebuild the thing you needed on an atomic level, maybe that's how they would do it.
Well, that was the other thing I was going to say, was that it converts your atoms into energy. Because as we know from relativity, matter is in a way just kind of frozen energy. Matter energy is all the same stuff.
Yeah, we'll get into a little bit later exactly how much energy a human body would represent on average. It's a lot,
mm-hmm.
Which is not a big surprise if you know how atomic bombs work. So now, otherwise, the only other thing we could think of is what Lauren was saying, that you disassemble a body into its constituent atoms and then, I don't know, pour them into a container, then pack those containers onto a spaceship, perhaps to save space. And then when you get to your location, you just pour the goo out into a recompiler of some sort to rebuild all the stuff that it used to be. Doesn't seem that much more practical than just, I don't know, climbing onto a spaceship and going someplace.
Right. So in order for it to be more teleportation in the way that we imagine it, it seems like the thing you'd have to do is dissolve the body, translate that material reality into information, transfer the information, and then use that information to rebuild the body at the destination.
Kind of atomically 3D print
yeah.
from the ground up.
Right.
That's a perfect analogy, yeah. So there you don't have a model. You don't have the thing you're printing, you know, emailing back and forth between computers. You just have information that represents how to do it.
Yeah. So there are arguments about whether or not this would be possible to make a copy of something, in which case you would have a replicator, right? You
mm-hmm.
It's essentially additive manufacturing at that point. Or if you're actually using quantum teleportation, the argument is that quantum teleportation does not allow for the original item to remain intact. You have to break it down to scan all the information, the quantum states that are involved in whatever that thing is. Specifically, they've been, you know, the experiments that have been done have been on single subatomic particles.
Mm-hmm.
Keep in mind that any physical object would be made up of a huge number of atoms, let alone subatomic particles.
Okay, so you're saying that this is where quantum teleportation might actually come into the picture of teleportation, is in the scanning of the material makeup of your body.
Yeah, this is like you have to project yourself forward decades and decades and decades where we'd have sophisticated equipment to be able to do this. But if we did,
you have to project yourself decades forward into science fiction.
Yeah, yeah. I say decades forward where we would have technology capable of doing this, but I say that as someone who doesn't believe that we're ever going to have technology capable of doing
yeah.
this.
So it's more like if we ever could.
If we could, yeah. this is likely what would happen based upon our understanding of quantum teleportation, which still has some pretty big limitations to it. So first, you would break down the body and scan that quantum state of all the particles, or at least most of them, to determine the information about that body. That's important because you need to have that information. That's part of the teleportation process. Now, there's actually a way to do this on the quantum level without measuring everything, and it's actually kind of bizarre and interesting. And the reason why you need it is because of Heisenberg's uncertainty principle.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if I recall correctly, that's the principle that says you can't know everything about a subatomic particle.
Exactly. Usually we think of it in terms of complementary states. Mm-hmm. So, for example, you can know a lot about the momentum of a subatomic particle or the position at a given time of a subatomic particle, but not both.
Right. And as you increase your knowledge about one aspect of it, you destabilize the system so that your knowledge becomes less and less relevant.
Yeah.
Right. And Star Trek actually knew about this. Yes, the giant unit known as Star Trek. The makers of Star Trek knew about this and kind of cheekily dealt with it in the show by including a little gadget in its transporter systems called the Heisenberg compensator.
Yeah.
Which they just never explain.
Yeah, maybe the Heisenberg compensator is just like, no, I'm sure.
it totally
just dismisses the uncertainty principle. I'm positive. I know how this works.
But researchers have figured out how to deal with this on a quantum state in real life.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. They did a runaround, a workaround of Heisenberg's uncertainty principle. So
this is sort of what quantum teleportation is, right?
Yeah.
Like the using the EPR.
Yeah, this is exactly the way that quantum teleportation works on a general scale. So I'm going to be using kind of a high level way of explaining this because honestly, to get any further into it would require an understanding of quantum physics that I simply do not possess.
Yeah, that's when the cells in Jonathan's brain start dissolving all on their own.
Yeah, they just start, you know, my ears go all quantum. At any rate, here's how it works. You measure a quantum particle to a certain extent, but not so much that your measurements are going to mess things up. The idea that, you know, by observing something, you affect that which is observed, that's unavoidable. But you can get enough of an idea of a quantum state without going so far as to try and get every single bit of information about it without completely ruining the whole process. So you've got a little bit of information about the quantum state of this particular particle. You then allow that quantum particle to interact with a second quantum particle. And for the purposes of this, instead of saying 1 and 2 and 3, I thought it'd make it easier and name each of the quantum particles. So quantum particle 1 is particle man. Quantum particle 2 is triangle man. Triangle man hates particle man.
Yes, so, as we all know.
So particle man is the one that you've partially observed. So you've got some information about its quantum state. Triangle man has previously formed a relationship with Universe Man. So this is particle number 3, subatomic particle number 3. So Universe Man and Triangle Man have become entangled, quantum entanglement. That is where you have complementary but different states of each of these subatomic particles, and as one changes, the other one changes to reflect it.
Right. So in effect, if you know something about one of them, you know something about the other one.
At least at that very moment, yes.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter how far apart these subatomic particles are in space. If they are on the other opposite sides of the galaxy, it's still the same. So if we go with that electron spin that I was mentioning earlier, if one is spinning up, the other one's spinning down. And it doesn't matter if they are next to each other or on the opposite sides of the galaxy, that relationship remains the same until you disturb the system. All right? So Triangle Man and Universe Man are quantumly entangled. Triangle Man then goes on to encounter Particle Man, the one that you measured. Mm-hmm. Now, this changes Particle Man, but it also changes Triangle Man, and by extension, changes Universe Man, because Universe Man and Triangle Man were entangled. You then send the information that you gleaned about Particle Man to Universe Man. Universe Man then becomes Particle Man. So Particle Man itself is no longer really Particle Man after it encounters Triangle Man. That encounter changes the very nature of Particle Man. Universe Man now becomes the new Particle Man. However, this process requires that you send that information across traditional communication channels so it can get to Universe Man to complete that transformation into Particle Man.
Wow.
Yeah. They Might Be Giants explains it better than I do. And like a minute less, obviously, too. And that's with a repeated chorus.
Yeah.
But this is really interesting to me because the idea of using entanglement to create this interaction and then send information on to a third particle that was part of that entanglement and essentially transform it into the first particle you started with is bizarre.
There's something very admirable about smart people trying to find loopholes in the laws of physics
yeah.
the way that, I don't know, your sketchy accountant might find loopholes in the tax code.
Or gamers might find little cheats that they can enact in a video game.
Right, uh-huh. right. It is really funny. And the of course, the amazing thing is it works.
Yeah.
Right? Like, this is not theory. This isn't a hypothesis. This actually does work. And it works on that subatomic quantum level. It is really kind of strange. It also, like I said, relies on traditional communication. You can't instantaneously have this happen. That scanning that you do at the beginning of the first quantum particle, that is a fundamental part of this process. And then you have to, you know, scanning isn't enough. You have to send that information on. So again, without the optical cable or some other means of transmission, you could not actually make this transformation happen. Universe Man would just be different Universe Man. It wouldn't be Particle Man.
But this, in theory, is how we could know what's going on in every single particle in your body if we needed to.
If you had a sufficient way of breaking everything down and observing just enough of the quantum state of all the particles, then maybe. Like, even then, it's a maybe. But the important thing to note is that scientists have said there's nothing fundamentally against the laws of physics for this to not work on the macro level. In other words, there's nothing that we know that says it's impossible to do this beyond the quantum level. It may still be impossible to do beyond the quantum level, but there's nothing we know right now that specifically states that.
Mm-hmm. And we haven't tried it yet, so
yeah.
We can't say
yeah.
for sure.
Hey, Bob, I got something I want you to give a go at. You know, let's just hop into this pod here. Don't worry about the fly.
I mean, it's kind of like saying that there's nothing in the laws of physics that says you can't make a factory in space that builds stars.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not against the laws of physics, but could we really imagine doing that?
Yeah, would it ever be practical at all or even plausible? Like, it may be possible, but not plausible, right?
Yeah.
Right, right.
So the other big downside of this, besides the fact that you're still relying on at least some means of traditional communication to get information to its destination, is that you have to destroy the original thing.
And we'll get to that in a bit.
Yeah, that's a big downside in general for a lot of these yeah. teleportation ideas.
Well, it's not that bad if you're using a hatchet.
Yeah,
in
a hatchet in a cup.
Yeah.
I mean, unless you're very unless it's a mystical hatchet.
Well, we may get into a Ship of Theseus kind of problem with this hatchet. So I think we should start with a few definite limitations that are coming up whenever
sure.
we're talking about any potential teleportation system.
And one on the macro level.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. One of them is going to be speed of travel.
Right. Now, in Star Trek, it's instantaneous.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how far away the Enterprise is from a planet's surface, that as long as they're within teleportation range, which is vaguely defined for the purposes of plot, you can totally beam them up and beam them down, and it takes no time at all.
Yeah, so I will venture.
Sometimes it fuzzes a little bit extra.
Yeah,
if it's a little bit out of range.
If
or
there's
like
ion
clouds passing by.
Yeah.
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 So I'm going to say that I feel pretty confident we will never, ever have instantaneous teleportation of any kind. Or at least as it seems to be depicted in movies and TV shows, you can't disappear in one place and appear in another place instantly because that violates relativity.
Yep.
It has you travel faster than the speed of light. And the speed of light as the universal speed limit, this applies whether you're taking the original atoms with you, which we seem to think was a pretty ridiculous concept, or not, even if you're just translating your body into a information signal and then having a machine build it somewhere else. The transfer of that information is going to be limited by the speed of light.
I just realized that if you sent all the actual atoms, you would be sending Space Jam.
That's true. That makes Joe so happy. And it fills me with gloom.
You don't want to come on and slam?
So one of the things we wanted to mention here is that that quantum teleportation, like we've already said, doesn't involve instantaneous transmission of information either. There's some people who think that entanglement, I think mistakenly believe that entanglement is able to give you some instant information across the galaxy, because if you have two particles that are separated by an entire galaxy and you observe one and you immediately know what the state of the other one was, that they say, oh, well, then that means you have transmitted information across a galaxy in no time. Therefore, you go faster than the speed of light. That's not exactly true. You could argue that the entanglement is actually the basis of the information was created when the two particles were close to one another. And it's just now you know what that relationship was. It doesn't mean that the information traveled anywhere. And in fact, we wouldn't be able to use quantum entanglement to do instantaneous communication across an entire galaxy, let alone teleportation. So that is, that's a non-starter as far as that's concerned. And, it does mean that we would still be limited by that speed of light. That's the, if we had a way of breaking down an object into information and then beaming that information to some distant location.
You'd probably be using radio waves or something.
Right, which would travel at the speed of light.
Yeah.
That's it. You that's as fast as you could go.
You could teleport to Mars in some number of minutes.
Yeah. Depending on how far apart Earth and Mars are at that time, exactly.
Yeah. Although this all explains to me perfectly why Miles O'Brien always looked so bored hanging out in the teleporter room of the Star Trek The Next Generation, the Enterprise.
He's just sitting there days at a time waiting for people to
materialize. I think he was just saying things like, oh, I curse the day we got that shuttle.
there are some other limitations I think
yes.
we should bring up. One of them is if you're talking about this process where you break down a body and just turn it completely into energy.
Yeah.
And then zap that across the solar system.
Yeah, that sounds super great. Why don't we do that?
According to the Arizona State physicist Lawrence Krauss, who wrote a book called The Physics of Star Trek, we referenced on this podcast before when talking about replicators, he says that in order to, quote, dematerialize a human body and turn it into energy, and I think he just means to break all the binding energy between all the atoms in your body as
right.
if you were using your body as the payload of a nuclear bomb, it would release the energy of about 1,100 megaton nuclear weapon detonations.
That sounds like a lot.
Uh-huh. The largest nuclear weapon ever tested, Tsar Bomba, which was tested up in the, that archipelago above Russia, had a 50 or 57 megaton yield. I've seen sources saying both. Some might just be rounding down to 50. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But around a 50 megaton yield, and that's the largest weapon we've ever tested. So double that and then 1,000 of those.
Yeah.
That's a lot of energy holding matter together, as we've known from the consequences of relativity.
Sure. Humans have a lot of atoms. Some of us more than others. I put on a few this past weekend, for example.
Maybe teleporters could be like the weight loss plan that we've all been dreaming of.
You get there and you have one fewer leg. I lost several pounds on that last trip. Well, there's also let's say that somehow we managed to figure out the energy problem. Like we figured out how to convert physical items into that massive amount of energy and still manage to handle it. Then we'd have to figure out how to reincorporate from energy back to matter, right?
Oh, whoops.
So that's an issue. Now let's say that's not the way we're going to go. We're not going to convert a body into pure energy.
Yeah.
Let's say instead
exploding the planet every time gets old.
Yeah.
So
let's say instead we do the quantum entanglement version or the quantum teleportation version.
Just sending data instead.
Yeah. So we already know human body represents a massive amount of energy. What about information? Well, I looked into this. This is one of those questions that I guess if you were to ask certain scientists, they'd look at you and go, don't you have something better to do?
No, seriously. I asked this question and I didn't know the answer, but Jonathan came up with it.
I found some people who tried to answer it.
How much data would it take in, I don't know, kilobytes to represent all of the matter energy content in a human body?
I'm not going to convert it to kilobytes because I don't have that kind of time. All right. Well, first of all, we don't know. That's right. The first thing is we don't really know.
We've never scanned the quantum state of every particle in a human body.
Which would be such a massive amount of information that's impossible to even guess at this point.
But what about a relatively simple conversion, like your DNA and the contents of your brain?
Well, fortunately, some students at the University of Leicester made some of those assumptions for us they decided to take on that burden as a thought experiment. So they actually thought they would use DNA as the means of figuring out the amount of information that humans have. They made some assumptions. They assumed that the DNA found in any given cell would have all the information needed to replicate all the cells in the body. Which, technically,
it's a simplification, but okay.
Yeah. So, and then they decided, all right, we also need to figure out what is the equivalent to the amount of information that would be encapsulated in the typical human brain.
Whoa, hold on. So this sounds to me less like teleportation and more like beaming instructions on how to clone you and reteach you everything you've ever learned.
That's about as close as I can get, you know. But
okay.
they were trying to figure out, like, how could they potentially make this happen.
Uh-huh.
So their calculations, however, unfortunately don't make it any more likely. Like, you might think, well, that's not the same as teleporting, but I know that another me will be at the destination and therefore will be able to do whatever needs to get done. Hang on to your horses, folks, because you don't have that kind of time. Trust me. Their calculations came to 2.6 times 10 to the 42nd power in bits.
10 to the 42 is a rather large number.
That's a tradecillion. That's 2.6 tradecillion bits, which is 325 duodecillion bytes.
What? Hold on. Somebody's just coming up with names for numbers like 10 to the 42nd power.
Oh, yeah. There's no prefix for that number of bytes, however, because our prefixes for naming large numbers of bytes stops at 10 to the 18, which is a yottabyte or yottabyte, as we have previously discussed on the show. And I think settled on Yoda because
you
it's
like
better.
Yoda. Yeah. All right. I'm more of a Yoda fan. But yes, I do or do not. There is no try.
Yada, yada, yada.
And for general reference, because this is a truly unimaginable amount of data that we're talking about, the last time we talked about big data in depth, way back, I think, in like 2013, humanity was creating a mere 2.5 exabytes of data every day.
Yeah. So that means a human being represents more information than the amount of information all human beings are creating collectively
on the internet
every single day.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a lot. That's a lot of info.
But, you know, there is another problem with the speed of transmission that's not just the speed the information travels.
Right. So let's say that you're talking, you know, you've already resigned yourself that this approach is going to rely upon transmitting the information over the speed of light, and that the destination you're aiming at is 100 light years away. So you already resigned to the fact that it's going to take 100 years for it to get there.
Mm-hmm.
You really don't even know the beginning of this because there's also the issue of bandwidth or throughput.
Right. Information gets to your 56K modem pretty quick.
Yeah. But the modem itself has to process that information, and it has a limit to the amount of information it can transmit or receive at any given time. So let's say that you have a device with a bandwidth of around 30 gigahertz and you use that to transmit this massive amount of data. That would mean that you would need to take 4.85 times 10 to the 15th power years to transmit one human being worth of data using this 30 gigahertz system. That, by the way, is longer than the age of the universe.
Well, so we need to work on our modems is what we're saying.
Yeah, right. No, that needs to be fixed toot sweet. And of course, like we said, this was just using DNA as the means of the information you would send. If you were to actually do the quantum states, it would be monumentally more information that you would have to transmit. And I don't know how you would do it. But at any rate, it would be one of those things where you might actually make the determination that taking a physical spaceship would mean you would use less time getting from point A to point B than teleportation, which it's not, kind of defeats the purpose, really.
Yeah.
Aside from making it cooler.
Yeah, right. It could, you know, it does sound kind of like a Futurama kind of thing, right? Where people use a technology mainly because it's cool, but not, it's totally impractical. It doesn't make any sense, but that doesn't really matter. Mm-hmm. So the other question we have, the other big roadblock is, assuming that you have a version of teleportation that does break down the original, doesn't that mean the original ain't around anymore?
You know, yeah, the first thing I thought about when we decided we were going to do this episode topic was I can't wait to talk about how every time you teleport yourself, you make a copy of yourself that lives in your house and eats the food in your refrigerator and sleeps in a bed with your spouse and doesn't realize you are dead.
Yeah, it's not you. It's not you. Yeah, the philosophical discussion that comes into this is that teleportation is, as IO9 once called it, a suicide machine.
Mm-hmm.
That you would go in, if you use it for a living thing, that living thing gets broken down, therefore it goes from living to not living anymore status.
Yeah.
And then a copy of that thing is reassembled, perhaps even with the same memories
sure.
and emotions. And
so the copy of you might be unaware that the original you died,
right.
which is a strange thought. There could be a copy of you that, for all you know, has experienced continuous consciousness, and that it's doing fine.
Or what appears to be continuous
yeah.
consciousness.
Yeah, well, it would
the
only
simulation
be,
of
yeah.
such.
It'd only be technically aware that you, that itself, had died. Pronouns get really tricky in this science
yeah.
fiction
I mean,
universe.
If it knows how teleportation works, then it would be aware that the version that stepped into the teleporter back at point A is not technically the same one that stepped out at point B.
Mm-hmm.
Although the one that's at point B still has all the memories and experiences of point A.
I have a question. Have y'all ever seen a Star Trek episode, if there is one I'm not aware of it, where they deal with this?
Bones would not take a teleporter because this was his argument. His argument was that, well, two things. One, that teleporters sometimes
malfunction
and then you'd end up
only
with
when
like
the plot necessitates.
Yeah, you have a
bones,
hand growing
worry.
Out of your stomach or something.
Yeah.
And then the other reason was that he essentially said, no, it just breaks you down and then a copy of you is remade. So, you know, the copy of you is unaware that the, you know, it doesn't have an experience of not existing anymore, but the version of you that was you, that part's over. That part's dead.
Can you imagine just living in a world where people accept this? You just accept the fact that you are going to die when you get into the transporter, but a perfect copy of you will be able to go about your business for you?
For me, it's hard to imagine. I wrote in our notes, I said, if I know me, the copy me will be both sad and a little smug about the whole thing. but me wouldn't care at all because I'd be dead.
So here's another complication.
Okay, yeah.
Star Trek often shows beaming to a place where there's no receiving technology.
Exactly,
it just
yeah.
beams you down to a jungle of potted plants somewhere on the surface of a planet.
Right, yeah.
Somewhere, with some vaguely red-colored hills in the background.
There's, uh-huh. Yeah, yeah. You beam into a soundstage at Burbank, California.
Yeah.
Right. But there's no transporter receiver. It just beams you down.
Right.
That was an advancement in transporter technology, I believe, that didn't happen until circa Next Generation.
No, it happened because they would beam down to the surface of planets.
That's right. No, they could. But for tricky situations, for like larger loads or something, they had to like set up the little triangulation.
Well, yes.
Devices.
They did have to do, they'd have to do that for some of them.
Yeah.
In the original series, you're right. By the time they got to the movies, that was no longer, they were ignoring that anyway, even in original series.
Okay.
But yeah, you are correct in that. I think they were trying to plan for that early in original series, but at any rate, they eventually abandon it.
Yeah, they could also remotely beam you up, so you wouldn't have to be in the transporter to get beamed up to the ship.
They just have to get a lock on you and they could do it.
Yeah, sometimes the transport operator would have to press like a lot of buttons, like really furiously.
Which is weird, right? Because there are certain times where someone will walk up to a panel and they will pull up something that seems really random, like, I don't know, the text to Midsummer Night's Dream, and they do it with the push of one button on the bridge.
Uh-huh.
Like, there's a button on the bridge dedicated to Midsummer Night's Dream, but if you want to lock onto somebody, you are typing for a good 20 seconds.
Uh-huh.
Captain Picard has shortcut needs.
And it's like he built in macros for all of Shakespeare's work and Charles Dickens.
I imagine what they're doing with the buttons on the when they're trying to lock on to someone on the planet is furiously emailing tech support.
I want to see, I know this is a tangent, but I want to see a version of Star Trek where they completely abandon all touch interfaces and it's all voice recognition, but the voice recognition is just slightly off, so they always have to keep repeating what it is they want in order to get it to do. Shields up. Like, here's your breakfast. No, I said shields up. Like, just, that would be great. I would love to see that.
Well, at any rate, this seems like a very obvious problem. In addition to all of the other things we've said so far, if you're starting to get the impression that teleportation is likely impossible, you're probably right.
Yeah.
But here's the other thing. If it's possible at all, it seems like you would definitely have to have machines at both ends.
Right, yeah. You have to have a place to send that communication to that can receive that information and then reassemble. We don't have a magic way of being able to create a space in a remote location that can reassemble something spontaneously. You would have to have some other means to do that. So I can't imagine a technology that would allow us to do that without some receiver. And even with a receiver, I can't really imagine technology capable of doing it.
Yeah, because it's not only a receiver, but like a molecular 3D printer.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, we actually have talked about replicators before, which are very much related to transporters in the Star Trek lore. And I don't think replicators are likely, but I think they're more likely than teleporters. I don't think that replicators are in any way close to being a real thing, at least not for a general replicator that can make anything. We've got certain substances that we can create kind of an automatic system to generate a whole bunch of it. But, you know, we can have like self-assemblers for things like polymer chains, but that's a lot different than, all right, I've got a chain of polymers, then I've got a table or a person.
Yeah. What you're really talking about, I think, is just further miniaturization of 3D printing.
Yeah.
Like, what is the smallest part you can print with your 3D printer?
So instead of printing in a material like plastic, you would be printing in individual atoms or molecules, which would then be assembled on that layer and then put into the right configuration to make whatever it was you wanted to make.
Right, because we're working on technology to be able to 3D print organs and skin and stuff like that. Not that skin is not an organ, but that's a lot different than putting together mere atoms.
Yeah, compared to atoms, those cellular materials that we're printing when we make 3D printed organs are gigantic.
Yes.
I am very skeptical about the idea of molecular assemblers and atoms.
I think
because of some of the things that have been pointed out about this are once you get down on that scale, you leave the realm of mechanical action and you enter the realm of chemistry.
Yeah.
When you're trying to place molecules and atoms, you're having to form and break chemical bonds to move them and put them in places. And so, like, how do you pick up a molecule and get it to stick to your finger and then put it somewhere and get it to stay there?
Yeah. And, when I wrote an article for How Stuff Works years ago about nanorobots. And even as I was writing it, most of the robots I was looking at were really micro robots because of obviously nano, getting something to the nano size and having it be, you know, having it have sufficient moving parts to really call it a robot is something that we're not really able to do yet.
Mm-hmm.
And in order for us to have a molecular assembler that would actually be able to just put together whatever it was you wanted, it would be incredibly difficult to create such a sophisticated, tiny device. I'm not saying that's going to always be impossible. It may be that one day we get to a level of sophistication where we can do that, but it's going to take a lot of time. And this is one of the reasons why, you know, people have submitted the gray goo scenario as a disaster scenario, the idea that these replicators would just start converting everything into the base units that they would use to make stuff out of. That seems pretty unlikely, seeing how far away we are from anything that would be capable of doing that in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost like
we have bigger worries.
Yeah.
What you're saying.
It feels like you're like, if you want to be worried about some sort of existential crisis, perhaps an asteroid collision with the Earth would be more appropriate,
or even climate change.
Things that are not only possible but will happen, right? So both of those things are happening. Climate change is happening, and the Earth will at some point be hit by an asteroid, just a question of time.
Yeah. I would hazard that at the scale that we're going, like a tornado full of sharks is more prescient to worry about.
Someone should make a trilogy of movies about that.
Yeah, I agree with you about the molecular and atomic level precision engineering, the molecular assemblers and everything. That seems very far off to me, and for the same reasons pretty much and more.
Yeah.
The teleportation atom by atom reassembly idea seems pretty just off the map in terms of possibilities. But I can see something that could approximate teleportation, probably not for living organisms because, again, it would probably kill you.
Mm-hmm.
But for inanimate objects, I could see something that is able to look at inanimate objects and break them not down to an atomic level, but say, okay, here's a chain of polymers that I can recognize as a chain of polymers, and that's easy to reproduce.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a piece of organic material of X kind that we've got sitting in the hopper at the destination location. Here's a piece of metal that we've got sitting in the hopper. And so you've essentially got very fine precision 3D printing.
So you're thinking about, like, teleporting a leather chair.
Sure.
Is what I'm hearing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you would be able to have it break
not
down.
Not atom by atom, right. but at a larger scale saying, sure. Okay, here's a basic type of object we've seen before mm-hmm. that's very tiny and mm-hmm. we can reproduce a fiber like this.
Yeah. So again, it would be more of an additive manufacturing 3D printing style where you just figure out what the ingredients and the orientation of all these different elements are in relation to one another,
yeah.
Send that information off to the destination, and then it builds that
thing.
Yeah,
if you can mm-hmm. scan something well enough, and then you can hypothetically print it.
Yeah.
I mean, the scanning, I think, would still present a problem. You would have to be able to look at an object and recognize large enough scale structures that it wouldn't have to do this atom by atom breakdown that we've pointed out the impossibility
spectroscope.
Of.
Spectroscope.
Yeah.
You do something like that, I would imagine. Yeah, and even then, you're talking about communication, right? You're still, yeah. It's still the limit of the speed of light.
And I would think it would still be easier to just be like, hey, Bob, this is how you build a chair.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
We'll send you some raw materials.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, or hell, we'll send you a chair.
This is a thing that comes up.
IKEA of the future.
I'm currently reading Dune for the first time, and
there's
a scene in Dune where they're walking around their new palace on on Dune on the planet Arrakis, and I believe Lady Jessica is commenting on the wood,
mm-hmm.
which obviously is not native to the planet,
mm-hmm.
so somebody had to ship in wood to the planet Arrakis,
right.
And that's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
Transporting wood across space and time.
Yeah. Yeah,
I don't know.
When you factor in how expensive it is to get stuff into space and how much work it takes, I totally understand. It is fun to talk about this kind of stuff because it's just it's that speculative science fiction that draws us to this
so
sort
cool.
of stuff. Yeah, it's a bummer to kind of say like, all right, well, this particular implementation looks, if not impossible, certainly very implausible. To the point where there would be no reason to pursue it. But it was fun to look into that and to see how people had tried to put quantitative values to stuff like the amount of energy contained in the human or how much data a human represents. So if you guys have suggestions for future topics, whether they are science fiction related or otherwise, I recommend you write in. Our email address is fwthinking@howstuffworks.com, or you can drop us a line on Twitter or Google+ or Facebook. At Twitter and Google+, we are fwthinking. Just search fwthinking in Facebook and we'll pop right up. You can leave us a message. We read all of them. We really enjoy the stuff you guys have been sending us. Keep it up, and we'll talk to you again really soon.
For more on this topic and the future of technology, visit forwardthinking.com. Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places.